You're good to go.
I'm good to go.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Talk to Danielle podcast. I am your host, Danielle C. Baker. And before we get started, be sure to like, follow, and subscribe to whichever channel you're listening and watching from. I'm going to make a quick introduction today because I have an amazing guest on. Really excited to have him on, a great author, and I've had a chance to talk with him a little bit off camera as well. And it's going to be a heavy topic, but this is what I like. Anybody who listens to me knows I like to get people thinking, get the people talking, and this is definitely a topic that we need to be talking. Everybody needs to be talking about, and I just love the way that our guest today brings it out. So I have the amazing Kay Snyder here with me, and we're going to be talking about reparations. So be ready. Thank you so much, Kay, for coming on and sharing all of your work with us. Before we get started, can you kind of tell us a little bit about your story and how you got to where you are today?
Sure. And first off, thank you so much for having me on your cast, Danielle. Make sure to like, follow, and subscribe, Danielle, wherever you are on the platforms that may be. My name's Kay Snyder. I'm originally a writer. I've worked in film and television for many decades, starting back with some famous sitcoms you've probably heard of, Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, Jamie Foxx Show, Keenan Ivory Wayans. So I came up as a comedy writer. Of course, I turned to more serious subjects as you grow and evolve in life. And there was a point where the governor of California, Gavin Newsom, made a large announcement about his blue ribbon panel that was going to study reparations. Now, again, being a Hollywood writer with over 30 years working inside a Hollywood studio system, I have particular knowledge as to what happens when you put 14 people around a table and ask them to create any form of document that represents a singular will. And I realized that there was a great need at that moment for someone to provide the working person, the non-political person, the non-media sphere person access to this conversation. So I sat down and I wrote my little ditty. It's called Reparations 101. It's on Amazon and Ingram Sparks and Barnes and Noble. It's almost anywhere if you look hard enough for it, because the reparations conversation is something that's frankly long overdue. And as it says here on my shirt, it says, what payment past due? So before there's payment, there has to be conversation. So I'm here to impose the conversation that is past due.
Yes, everything is
Everything is
past due from it's not, it doesn't date back to yesterday. So it's definitely something that we need to talk about. And that's why I so appreciate you coming on. And I appreciate we got to meet last month at the event. And I knew right away, I was like, yeah, I need to have you on this. Why is it? Because we, like you say, people talk about reparations. They talk, you hear it kind of perk up again, but why is it now more important than ever to really get those conversations going and get some results out of it as well?
I think one of the key factors in that is what I like to call the age of knowing. We're beyond the age of speculation where, well, you don't really know and you can't really say who did what and when. But what we know in the age of knowing, for example, we know that the Earth is approximately 4.5 billion years old. It's not up for debate. It's not up for dispute. I think the reparations conversation is much in the same light, whereby the perpetrators and the profiteers of the slave industrial complex are still household names to this day, and they kept immaculate records. Therefore, it's not hard to draw the parallels and draw the conclusions that are really right in front of your face. Bank of America didn't come from nowhere. JP Morgan didn't come from nowhere. DuPont didn't come from nowhere. Harvard didn't come from nowhere. Yale didn't come from nowhere. Yale was a person. A lot of people don't know that. Yale was the Elon Musk of slavery, is what I like to call him. He was one of the world's wealthiest men based on enslaving hundreds of thousands and then calling himself a philanthropist and a great father of scholarship. So these are the things that have to be discussed openly. And I, for one, am here to have that conversation with the American people.
That's really good, and that's why, like, if you want to show that book up again, it's not a 1400 page book that'll get people
No,
to
you
not
see
want to
that?
read. You keep it straight to just what we need to talk about, and you've mentioned some of them, but you really do spend some time on the key players that you call the structures. Can you kind of go over, explain why you've decided to really go with those key players, so those real players that you call them?
Absolutely. And again, thanks for your great question. Let's put our cards on the table. What America has is a huge problem of basic accountability. How the story of the Mayflower is ultimately about the genocide of the Native American people, but it's been somehow put through this Hollywood filter of Pocahontas and Thanksgiving meals and love and fellowship. Trust me, if the Indians had to write a story about Thanksgiving, the guys with the hats and the buckles would not come off as the kindly, God-fearing, travelers that they present themselves to be. So, in the reparation slavery discussion, it must be known that racism itself is older than the United States. If you don't hear anything that I say today, what we call Wall Street, which is the financial center of America, i.e., the world, i.e., the universe, okay, had its foundation as a thing called the Wall Street slave market. So before there was a New York Stock Exchange on that very ground, it was a slavery-based economy. And it's important that people understand we're not talking about a few people who were kidnapped off a piece of land and put on a boat. No. We're talking about the financial machinery that this company operates on today. The very first municipal bonds were based around slavery. The very first investment portfolios were based around slavery. The very financial instruments that move the markets and move our culture to this day. Very same machinery that we live under today. Its roots of construction are based in slavery, and not enough people know that, and not enough people talk about that.
And those key players are not going to be announcing it either. They're not going to be saying, "Hey, this is our real history." So this is why it's so important. This is why I appreciate how you wrote your book, because it's like you say, you're just putting the cards down. Let's talk. And you're not it's not a blame game either. Like, you're just these are the facts. This is really what's happening, and we need to talk solutions now. This has been going on for too long. So I'd like to put some cards down on the table again, and let's talk about white guilt, because now we're talking about generations and generations and generations
Yes.
of people who not only have gone through the trauma of slavery and when that came through and without anybody taking accountability for it, but also generations of people who's had family members they might not be proud of, and they don't know how to handle that. And most of the time, you just want to kind of stick your head in the sand and not talk about it and say, "Well, this never happened." Like, we don't talk about these family members. So can you a little bit talk about why it's so important if we address reparations and get it properly going. What does that to what that does to white guilt? Because I really like your take on it and your view on it.
Well, again, thanks for bringing that up. That's actually chapter, I believe, 6 in my book. It's called The Rub: Morals, Ethics, Toxic White Guilt, and Cognitive Dissonance in a Divided America. So it's the entire egg roll, if you will, of all the things wrapped inside of it. So it's morals, ethics, toxic white guilt in a divided America. The morals and the ethics clearly indicate that what happened was a crime against humanity that needs to be morally and ethically rectified, right? So the morals and the ethics on the argument are beyond question, right? So if the morals and the ethics of the situation are beyond doubt, then what is the problem? You see, what is the problem if you know that the morals and the ethics line up on the side of reparations? What is the real problem? You know how when you're a kid and you come home and you look funny and your mom says, "What's wrong, baby? What's going on?" And then you say, "Oh, nothing." And then your mom says, "You can't say that to me. I know something's wrong with you," right? And then you have to tell her. This is much the same way what we say to white America is, you are infected with the toxic white guilt. Because when you know that you're morally and ethically bound to do something, and still you don't do it, that's where the guilt comes from. You're guilty because you know you're wrong. That is the human condition. That is the God particle. And as much as white America has been doing their best to wash away the God particle from them, it still exists. So once you have this guilt based on the fact that you're morally and ethically bound to do something that's uncomfortable for you, and you refuse to do it, and you have this guilt, that guilt metastasizes into fear. Because when you've done something, when you've harmed someone, and you're guilty about that, your second emotion is, "Oh my God, what if they do that to me?" It's a natural human reaction. So guilt creates fear. Now, what happens when you get tired of being afraid? Because that's the next chain of events, right? You're afraid of your neighbor. You're afraid all the time because you harm that person. They know you harm them. You won't make it right, but yet you're afraid. But now you're tired of being afraid because no human wants to live in fear, do they? So that fear, that comes from guilt, turns into anger. So now you're angry at the person that you violated. So now, because you're morally and ethically boxed in, and you know that the God particle says you're morally and ethically wrong, but you refuse to do the right thing, that has created guilt. That guilt creates fear. That fear creates anger. That anger, especially, is dangerous. See, because when Black people get angry, what are we gonna do? We're gonna protest. We're gonna march. We're gonna have a couple of celebrities, right? We're gonna sing a couple of songs, and everybody's going the F home. When white people get angry, bad things happen to Black people, right? It could be a unsanctioned, a unsanctioned dude with a gun riding around in a golf cart that suddenly becomes afraid of a Black teenager in a hoodie, and now this unsanctioned, unlicensed person can murder, it can take a Black child's life because of his fear. And they always say, "Oh, I was afraid of him." Well, what are you afraid of? a child with Skittles in his pocket? Or are you afraid that the harm and the trauma you inflicted on these people will be revisited upon you? That's why reparations is the solution. Reparations provides the avenue for that white person to assuage their guilt because they're saying, I'm taking responsibility for what happened. Okay, even if I didn't directly benefit, if I'm living in the construction of my grandfather's castle, then you owe your grandfather's debts, don't you? So, reparations, and that's the beauty of this book. If you get to the last chapter, right, and you get to the point where it says reparations is actually going to create a better America. It will actually end the war between the races because then black people can look at white people without the burning hatred of trauma and violation. And then white people can look at black people without toxic white guilt, which creates toxic white fear, which creates toxic white brutality, which creates toxic white overkill. The war will be over. We can live in harmony as the races and the nations are supposed to, but you have to say, hello, neighbor, I did that. I'm sorry. And here's your turkey back. That's it. That's what reparations is in a nutshell. A lot of people think that it's some sort of service or some kind of charity. No, it's an inheritance. It's an inheritance. Okay? The bill for unpaid wages alone lies in the trillions. Let alone the economic destruction of the post-slavery years where black people started off and they made Tulsa and they made Wilmington and they made all these great neighborhoods and they were all burnt down. It's an inheritance. And I'm here, and this book is here to get people to stand up and claim the inheritance.
I see it even as like it's a debt that needs to be paid, like you say, that turkey. But we're just using turkey as an example. Obviously, it's more than that, but
Yes.
like pay your dues. If somebody owed you money and they're not paying it, but you're seeing them spending money elsewhere, you would get angry, you would get frustrated, you would get
Absolutely. And
so
I
it's the
don't
same
want
thing.
your audience to think, I don't want your audience to think that I'm coming after your rank and file Joe Sixpack tax payer. Because no. It's not about you don't have enough money, Joe Sixpack, Joe Plumber. You don't have enough money to pay us back. No. But Citibank does, and Wells Fargo does, and Aetna Insurance does, and Lloyd's of London does, and B of A does. I call them the dirty dozen. The core financial machinery that built this country, all your major banks, I'm going to list them off real quick. B of A, Wells Fargo, Citibank, Mellon Bank, right? Even your northern banks also profited from slavery. A little thing a lot of people didn't know about the Civil War was that the banks bet on who? Both sides. So they were in it. They were just as in on cotton and tobacco as they were on steamships and railroads. So our legacy banking industry of America, I am putting you on notice. Okay, we're coming for your money, Aetna. We're coming for your money, Brown Brothers Harriman. Okay, even these big super private banks, Brown Brothers Harriman is a bank you've never heard of, but they're a huge, important private bank. Okay. And they've been around since the 1800s and they owe me money. And I'm coming to get it. So it's about the major corporate players, not about the white guy who I work with or the neighbor down the road. It's not about your money, even though there will be a government payback component too, because how racism works is that it's a collusion between big business and government designed to benefit its operators at the expense of a targeted population. So it's not just the businesses by themselves, it's the businesses in league with the government. That's why the governments have to pay too. That's why your state governments have to pay too. So when we're talking to Joe, average white guy neighbor, yes, your taxes are going to be involved, but it's only to the minority percentage of what the banks and the insurance companies and the corporate profiteers who owe. So that's important that people have this type of conversation. And I think what's going on right now is that people aren't really drilling down on what the real conversations are. They just hear the word reparations and they get all emotional. And what my little 90-page book does is it allows you to read this book in one day and then have the conversation with your neighbors tomorrow, because I believe that's how change happens, is that you change attitudes, you change the mass consciousness of the people, a la gay marriage or a la medical marijuana. You change the attitudes and then the laws follow. And
That's
it all starts here. Thank you for
it.
having me on your program again.
And this is what I appreciate about the book is because we've talked about this previously as well, but there are no emotions. It's just purely facts. It's historical. Nobody can debate that it happened, unless we start changing the history books. But that's another story. But you really do leave the emotions out, and that's one of the reasons why it's this tiny is you leave out the trauma. Because a lot of people will lead, especially when it comes to slavery,
Sure.
will lead with the trauma and reopen that up and get people emotional to the point where they lose control of their emotions. And now we're not talking about the same thing anymore. Why did
Absolutely.
you? I loved how can you kind of explain why you left out the traumatizing parts of slavery and just stuck to the facts and let's deal with this with the facts as opposed to with the emotions.
Sure. Because the trauma is what keeps people focused on the wrong thing. So as long as I'm presenting stories of rapings and lynchings and families being torn apart and kidnapped and all of that, those are human tragedies. Okay. The way I say it is that we can't get our grandmother's tears back. Mama done cried them tears. You can't get them back, but we can get the money back. So to go over the anecdotes of personal trauma and tragedy, it really does less to advance the goal. So that's why I chose less to talk about, because if you talk to any Black person, oh, they know everybody's got 10 stories about that thing that happened that was wrong, and we felt bad, and we were abused, or we were exploited. So there's no shortage of those stories. If I put all of those stories in, my book certainly wouldn't be able to read in one day, and you wouldn't be able to focus on the core issues of healing and reparations. And back on the subtitle of my book, it says Bridging America's Racial Economic Divide. So I believe that, reparations is almost the magic bullet. It will cure a multitude of the ills, both socially and economically, that fracture this country and keep it from being as great as it can be. But here's the good news, America. Black folks are here to save you from yourself again.
Right. Yeah, you're right. Yeah.
Okay, Black people are here to save America from itself. What? Wait for it. Again.
Yeah.
And it
Yeah.
starts right here. And in the day that reparations is the law of the land and my face is on a postage stamp, right? They're going to say, oh, he was so brave and that he led us into our higher self. But right now, they're not going to be so kind to me. History has a way of being kind to Black people in the future, doesn't it? History has a way of acknowledging us after the fact. But that's just part of being a Black genius. You just have to be ready for that. You just have
That's
to be
right.
ready for that. Okay?
It comes with the territory. You gotta power through.
And there's even a saying for it. I don't know if you've heard this, Danielle, so I'm going to share this with you.
Okay.
It's a Black proverb, and it goes like this: A Black man has to be twice as good to get half as far or none of the credit.
Wow.
Get your mind around that.
That's a powerful, powerful saying, but it says it all. It
Yeah.
says it all.
Yeah.
I like that. Oh,
And
wow.
the irony of it, right, is that when you look at the racial wealth gap, the Black man doesn't have to work twice as hard. He has to work 10 times
And
as hard. It's not even twice as hard. It's 10 times. So even in our old Black proverb, we had the math wrong.
right.
Right?
Or it grew exponentially.
And here's the up and the down of that. Okay? Because of the enormous social and economic and political pressure that's been placed on Black people, we tend to create supermen. We tend to create those that transcend enormous adversity, transcend enormous adversity. For Colin Powell to be head of the Joint Chiefs of Staff for the United States military, he didn't have to be good. He had to be really, really, really good, right? If you look at every historical anything that's happened in America from a science or technological standpoint, I bet you dollars to donuts, there's always a Black guy named Jim. Always. Always. From the atom bomb, right, to the trains, to the cotton gin, to Jack Daniel's liquor came from Black people, for crying out loud. You know what I'm saying? So we have this tendency to create supermen, but the problem with the superman is that what does that do for the rank and file? Right? How does the average person compete against Michael Jordan? How does the average guy says, well, look, I'm just a dude and I work hard, and why don't people love me? Because you're not Michael Jordan. Who can stand up to that? Who can hold up to that? Huh? Will Smith, Michael Jordan, Sean Combs. Oh, no, that's the wrong name. Wrong name. No, Diddy. Diddy's out. Diddy's out. No. But what I'm saying is that we have to create supermen. And in our interpersonal dynamic, the destructive part is that it turned the Black woman into superwoman. And it's very difficult for a regular dude to deal with superwoman. You know how I know? My mama was superwoman. Okay? But she had to be, because what happened through our slave experience was that the Black man was disconnected from what manhood is. And don't want to get too far down the road here, but the basic essence of manhood is only two things, and that's to provide and to protect. And when you're living in a condition where you cannot provide for your family because all of your labor goes to the slave master, after you've worked 14-hour day, that same dude can come and kick your door in and rape your wife in front of your kids. So what happened was that we lost our ability to provide and protect for our women. And what's worse, Danielle, is that our women saw that. And that the tragedy of the Black man and the Black woman is that the Black woman said, he can't protect me. and he cannot provide for me. Therefore, I have to become Superwoman. Now, she didn't want to become Superwoman, did she? She had to become Superwoman, or our race would have been lost completely. Right? So these are the things that have to be healed. When the black woman doesn't have to be Superwoman, and the black man doesn't have to be Michael Jordan. It's a lot of pressure in our household.
There's a
You
lot to
understand?
unpack. There's a lot to unpack there, and it's a vicious circle because once the woman is forced to become the superwoman, then it hits the man a second time because now he's still not able to provide and protect. Now she's taking over the role, and but
And
she's
she
not
doesn't
doing.
trust him, and she doesn't listen to him, and she
But
won't follow him.
yeah,
And
but at the same.
how can a race advance itself if the woman won't hold the man's hand or let the man hold her hand
Yeah.
as they walk down the road? But when the woman doesn't trust the man or doesn't even think he's smart enough and has even lost respect for this man,
Yeah.
it's a very difficult thing that has to be healed. And reparations is the first thing of the
Yeah.
big pill that's going to start to heal these massive holes in our culture. And America, that's the least you could do for black people after everything black people have done for you. That's
Yeah.
the least you can do.
Because that's been impacted over generations, so it's not something that's just that takes a long time to, yeah. That's why we need to have these conversations, and something needs to get done now. We need to get that ball rolling. And it's so important. Can you kind of There's so many things I want to ask you now, but let's keep it. I'm gonna try to keep stay on track for the, for now.
Right,
But can you
right.
kind of you've mentioned a few little pieces of your book, but can you kind of go over the core issues that you talk about? You've talked about the real players, the guys that really made a lot of money off of a specific people. And what other issues do you kind of mention in your book so people can kind of is know ahead before they go
Sure.
and buy it, yeah.
And again, my book isn't designed to be the encyclopedia of slavery. It's not designed to be the encyclopedia of reparations. What it's designed to do is get you into the conversation. So it's designed to give you the what, the why, the how much, and the who pays, so
Yeah.
that you can put your life experience into the basic construct of these are the facts. So I go through, of course, we know what the history is from 1619 and all the ga-ga-ga and the ba-ba-ba. But you also have to look at what the economic impact is. A lot of people don't say it. I'm not a professor, right? But I'll stand on a stack of textbooks and say that industrial slavery was the big bang of capitalism. None of this would be in place were it not for this one 200-year period where you got to exploit free labor and create the world as we know it. Okay? This world we live in today is nothing more than a continuation of the world that was constructed 300 to 400 years ago. So, I talk about these huge economic structures that are the cornerstone of what we call America. Then I ask the other pertinent questions. Well, is there any precedent for this? As a matter of fact, Danielle, yes, there is. Okay, there are precedents where there have been historical violations of human rights, and restitution, reparations were made. The most famous case that most people know is the state of Israel itself is a reparation that was paid to the Jewish survivors of the Holocaust by not only the British and the United States, but yes, from the German profiteers and perpetrators of the Jewish Holocaust. They had to pay, and they still pay to this day, most of them. We're talking about the names that survive to this day. Hugo Boss, there's a name. Porsche, Audi, Volkswagen, Mercedes-Benz, Bayer Aspirin, Krupps, and Deutsche Bank. They send money to Israel to this day.
Wow.
So there is precedent. That's why the state of Germany and the state of Israel are cool to this day. They're cool right now because the German people did the right thing. They said, yes, we did this. Yes, we're sorry. Yes, here's your turkey back.
Right.
Right?
Right.
Because what the Holocaust was, beyond a traumatic genocide, it was one of the greatest wealth transfers, huh? When all of the wealth of the Jewish people was confiscated from them. So they like to focus on the physical trauma, but what it actually was a huge theft of personal wealth that had to be acknowledged and repaired. So I talk about that so that people think that reparations is just this foreign notion that doesn't really make sense. No, there are reparations that have taken place and that are still taking place to this day.
Right.
So these are the subjects that I go into the book, just so that you can have a clear understanding so that you can, again, begin to have the conversations.
Right. And it's, you don't have to reinvent the wheel. It's happening. It's done somewhere, and you see the results. So there's no, it doesn't have to be that overwhelming if we just kind of structure it properly and start working on it, as opposed to just pushing it, under the rug.
There's a lot of reparation studies, like they want to study what happened. And my book and my work is designed to get people beyond the study. I'm here to provide, and I'm thank you again for leading me into what I'm really about, which is intellectual clarity and moral conviction. What my book is designed to do, it is designed to get the reader not only to have an opinion, but to actually open their lungs and speak to their neighbor, to their family member, to their friends, because it's an active kind of book. I didn't write the book for you to read and then to put on your shelf and have a muse about it. Right? It's not a muse book. It's a open your mouth, open your lungs. And what my book's designed to do, again, is intellectual clarity and moral conviction. Intellectual clarity means it gives people a clear understanding of what the case is. And it gives you the moral conviction to actually act. And these are the key components. This is how change happens.
Exactly.
Intellectual clarity and moral conviction. Everything else is just time. And I'm the luckiest man in America because I can't believe I'm the one who gets to do this work. I'm actually giddy when I think about it. It's a really difficult thing to do. And when I first started writing this book, like I said, I'm a comedy writer. Okay, so when I first started writing this book, and I said to myself, "Well, do I call my agent with this? No. I mean, do I really want to do this work? Because I understood and I understand what the work is." My second thought that I had is, well, why isn't somebody important doing this? Why isn't Gail and Oprah doing this, right? Where is Barack and Michelle? Where is anybody? Where is Jay-Z and Beyonce? What are they doing about this, right? Why is it me, a little guy in a room, who has to do this? But guess what? I won't question the maker. If he chose me, this is my work to do. So I do it with a full heart and a smile on my lips.
Good. The way to do it is the way to do it.
That's all I got.
get the ball rolling, and that's what's the important thing. And you
Yeah.
brought up a good point of, what to focus on, because I also am the type of person who's like, okay, what do we do from today? We are opening up these conversations. We're learning about things that we may not have known before. We're sticking with the facts. So what is your recommendation if we were to for our listeners, parents, or anybody, what is one thing that they could start doing today to educate themselves and their children on the facts and not get caught up in the noise? Or if they start talking to their neighbor and everybody's like, well, I heard this, and I just to get rid of that noise and just focus on the facts, how can people kind of do that without getting lost and or give up on it?
Well, I'm not a psychologist or anything like that. I'm just a dude. But what I would say is the first thing is don't be afraid to engage with the uncomfortable. Progress is uncomfortable. Change is uncomfortable. So we've gotten into a space where discomfort is grounds for offense. And that suppresses the progress that comes through uncomfortable moments, right? The progress that comes from when someone says, well, look, how would you feel if you had to walk past the building of your rapist and murderer every single day, and they're doing just fine, right? These are uncomfortable conversations, but only through that discomfort can we get to a space of mutual respect. So the first thing that I can say to anyone, male, female, black, white, because it makes black people uncomfortable too. Right? There are a lot of black people who are uncomfortable with the reparations conversation because it makes them uncomfortable. Right? So the very first thing that my book's designed to do, again, that's why it's so thin, is that it's designed to be a non-threatening way to get into the conversation so that it's not too much for you. So the very first thing is just to be okay with being uncomfortable, is my best answer.
I like that. And it's just because it's uncomfortable doesn't mean it has to be confrontational. It
Right.
just means we're talking and we're looking for that solution and the first steps. How do we do this? So I
And
really
it's
appreciate.
okay to say that you're uncomfortable. See, it's okay to say you're uncomfortable, but then, just be okay with hearing maybe that's your guilt talking. And then you have to be okay with saying, well, you know what? Yes. And then we'll see where America really lies. Right?
No, that's exactly.
You can't be afraid to get a little weird, as they say. As they say, right, Danielle?
Yes, I like that. We need to get weird on this.
We
So
need to get weird on this and break it down.
it really needs, because it's too solid. There's so many excuses. That lack of accountability is just, we're just going to swish it around and ever just like hot, a game of hot potato. We don't want to have to
And
be the
isn't
ones
it
that.
ironic how the American, MAGA Trump world, they're so, bossed up on we do things the right way and we're gonna do this way. You're okay. Well, then can you smell your own farts and stay in that room? And America, this is, right? We need to open the window. But when I go to Florida and confront them, or when I go to the New York Stock Exchange and hold a protest on the steps of the New York Stock Exchange, it's going to get confrontational. There's no way around it. But that's my job, okay? I'm completely protected. I am completely within the hands of The ones before me, Martin,
Right.
Malcolm, Marcus, and me. Go figure. Who knew it was going to be me? I know I didn't. But here I am.
Those are big shoes to fill, yeah. But it needs to be done.
Somebody's got to do it.
We need more
And
cave
trust
painting.
me, if somebody, taller, smarter, and better looking comes along to do this, I will step back. I will. But until such time, you got to deal with this. Okay?
That's all good. We need to deal with it. Yeah, that's
It
so
might get
important.
weird, but we'll be
Yeah,
better for it.
that's
On
right.
the other side, I mean. And if we've got one more minute, what I really want to talk about is the other side.
Yes.
And
Yes,
that's
please.
what people don't really talk about. What do reparations look like? What does that mean, right? And it's such a beautiful thing. When I talk about it, there's a great speech by Martin Luther King just before he's murdered in Memphis, where he says, "I've been to the mountaintop and I've seen the promised land," right? But he didn't tell us what it looked like, did he?
No.
He got murdered the very next day. So we're like, "Well, what's it look like, Martin? Well, what is it? What? So all we know is that it's 2025, and this ain't that promised land that he was talking about. Reparations is a period lasting between 40 and 60 years where African Americans, all 41 million, benefit directly in the inheritance that they've earned. I have a core list of four things that paint the picture. It's called the Four Demands, and it helps people have a better understanding of what reparations might look like and what it would change. Now, the very first thing is that the official end of slavery has to be moved from 1865 to 1965, to the passage of the Voting Rights Act, because no Black person born before 1965 had any real rights. Okay? In fact, South Africa based their entire system of apartheid on the United States. Little fun fact there. So, what that does is that it throws out the specious argument that, oh, well, slavery ended a long time ago, so that's not relevant today. No. 1965, there are millions of African Americans that are alive today that were born before 1965. They would be direct beneficiaries that would say, "I know the world that you grew up in wasn't the land of the free, even though you were used like free labor and free whatever," right? All those other things. So that's the first thing. The second thing is that all surviving corporations of the slave industrial complex be held publicly and financially accountable. All surviving corporations of the slave industrial complex. There are too many to list, and you know a lot of them, from Levi's jeans to Coca-Cola to Procter and Gamble soap to there's over 500,000 miles of railroad tracks still in use in America that were laid by slaves. Union Pacific didn't even say thank you. Okay? So these are the kind of things that have to be rectified. All surviving corporations, the entire insurance industry comes from slavery. New York Life, Aetna, Travelers, the big corporations. We're not talking about mom and pop stuff here. We're talking about major multinational super conglomerates owe us money. They have to be held publicly and financially accountable. That's point two. Point three. Reparations will last a period no fewer than five generations, which would be around 40 to 60 years. The mathematics that I use is you pay us back 1 year for every 10 that you stole. If you look at a 400-year cycle, if you stole 400 years, pay us back 40. Isn't that reasonable? Would you do you believe that that's reasonable? Does that sound reasonable?
That is very reasonable, yeah.
Right? Now,
Right.
other aspect to that was that the harm done to us was done intergenerationally. It went from child to grandchild to grandchild, 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 grandchild. Therefore, the notion of a single one-time lottery check, single time, one-time settlement payout is a non-starter. It's garbage, and we're not even going for it. We're not even going for it. So when they say, "Oh, you can get a $2 million payout," absolutely not. Absolutely not. Because they would take that $2 million from you so fast. All the companies that pay the $2 million, they would take that $2 million from you so fast, and then they would reinforce the structures that created the imbalance in the first place. The whole point of reparations is to even the racial wealth gap. A single time $2 million payout is not going to shrink the 10 times racial wealth gap. The other aspect of time, and I got to get this in because I know time's short, but this is important. The other aspect of the 40 to 60 year time window is that generations have to die out, both white and black. My generation has to die out, white and black, because we don't know how to be other than traumatized Africans. That's all we know how to be. And conversely, all white people know how to be is white supremacist sympathizers. It's just baked into the cake. Therefore, a period of 40 to 60 years will allow the profit to be removed from racist economic policy. You have to remove the profit from the policy. It's all very scientific. I don't want you to think it's emotional at all. It's all very scientific. You have to remove the profitability from the practice of racism in order to remove the viability of racism as an economic policy. So, if you penalize the slave industrial complex for five generations for 40 to 60 years, then you remove the profitability from the practice of racism. And the practitioners also get to pass in time.
Right.
Such that the most important thing that I want to say is that at the end of those 40 years, you'll have a whole new American, both black and white. We'll all be different. Because white people won't be guilty and nervous and shook up and afraid, and black people won't be constantly terrorized by living as a subset in a structure that's not designed for you. I'm sorry, but I could talk about this all night, so I don't
Oh,
want to ramble.
no, and like I said, I could talk to you about it. We could take the whole weekend to talk about this, but
You know?
honestly, with the bigger parts that you just given us, there's nothing insane about it. There's nothing outstanding. Like it just makes sense. It's just that's we're just going from what happened, and then we just carried it over to what's going to become, and it's feasible. I just see, like I'm a visual person, and the way that you explain it, I can see it, and then there's a structure there. So let's start planning it out. Let's start doing it, and let's put it in motion. So I really appreciate that. I said I could talk to you all weekend about this. We'll have to have you back on for an
I'll
update,
be
but
glad to come back.
yes, but
Yes.
you have some stuff coming up. So just before we wrap up, can you kind of tell us what's going on with you in the next little bit with all
Yes,
this?
I do. We're planning a national petition drive called the Four Demands of Reparations. It's the three items that I listed previously. And the fourth one is that direct cash payments are non-negotiable. Okay. The bottom line is that the entire purpose of the slave industrial complex was revenue and profit. Okay, so these are the core demands. So I'm generating a petition, a national four demands petition to circumvent all the various committees that are going to come up with their political hack compromises. So what my petition is designed to do is to present the base of negotiation. Just the base that can't be talked out of or, politicized or perverted or twisted or any of that. So before the powers that be and the commissions present their findings, no. We're going to get in front of that. And the popular will of the people is going to be to sign the four demands petition on reparations. -101.com. That's the website. Reparations 101. As you see, we've got a great clothing line as well. We've got hats, hoodies, t-shirts. You can wear your support, wear your advocacy, and you be on the lookout in the mail for your copy and your t-shirt as well. Danielle, I'm a man of my word. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you so much. And I will put all of that information in the description as well. So for people that want to get the book, people who want to
Go
sign
on
that petition,
Amazon, go on
Amazon.
Amazon.com and get Reparations 101. Today, you can read it in one day and start talking about it. That's how things change. Read it in one day and start talking about it tonight. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you so much, Kay, for that. And again, I'll put that description in the description so people know where to go to sign the petition, where to get your book. And is there any other way that they can reach you if they want to know more about your work, if they want to have you come over and speak about it, or if they want more information, is your website the
For
best
sure.
place?
I'm on Instagram as well, Reparations 101, and you can reach out to me there. I'm not very good with the Facebook, so I'm getting the tech kind of worked out, but I do have the Instagram up, as you know. So reach out to me on the gram at Reparations 101, and
That's
I'll
amazing.
reach right back to you. That's for sure.
Great. Thank you so much, Kenny, for coming on, for sharing that. Again, I could keep you on forever, but we'll wrap it up on this, and we'll definitely want to have you back a little later
Thank you
on.
so much. You were awesome. I had a great time. This was my first appearance on a cast, and thank you for being so gentle and so accommodating. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you so much. And for everybody listening or watching, don't forget to follow, like, and subscribe to whichever channel you're listening or watching from. Don't
Hit
forget to
the
go to
button. That's right. Like, share, subscribe, hit the button.
make sure you do the same with Kay. Go check him out on the gram and go sign that petition, please. We do need to get that ball rolling and support the man who's gonna lead forward. So thank you again so much, and I can't wait to see what's gonna be coming next. It's gonna be a lot. It's gonna be beautiful to watch.
You were terrific, Danielle. I can't
Sure.
wait until
Thank
we
you.
catch up again.
That's right. And for everybody else, until next time, stay safe, stay awesome, and we'll talk soon.